The season of giving, some people call this time of the year. It is the season of giving and receiving and buying and making. We could get deep into a discussion of the merits of all that, but today we'll focus on the giving and the benefits it confers, not just now, but all through the year, and not just to the receiver, but to the person doing the giving. Jenny Santee is the author of a new book called The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. Jenny Santee has been studying and working in philanthropy for a long time, with an MBA in one hand and time at the prestigious Wharton School in the other. She's currently a philanthropy advisor to celebrity activists and other philanthropists, and is a chartered advisor in philanthropy at the New York University's Heyman Center. Jenny Santee, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you so much for having me in your show.
You bet. Good to have you here. Philanthropy advisor, not a term you hear every day. What do you do?
I know, it's quite unusual. As a philanthropy advisor, I work with my clients to help them channel their wealth, their power, and their influence towards social good. And my approach is that people's philanthropy should not only be making a positive impact on the world, but also be personally rewarding, fulfilling, and life-changing for them.
Well, no, personally rewarding and fulfilling and life-changing. So this sounds like it goes just beyond, you know, I think people like me if I do this.
Well, it should make you feel good. You know, let's not give until it hurts, rather until it feels great.
Mm-hmm. And how choose this particular career, Jenny?
I guess I've always been the idealistic type of person, and I wanted to do something that would allow me to make a difference.
You grew up with money in your own life, I understand. Is that true?
Well, not ultra high net worth, but I would say middle class and very comfortable. And yet I always saw as I was growing up, because I grew up in the Philippines, that there was a lot of poverty all around. And I knew from a young age that I had to do something about it. I wasn't sure exactly what, but it was always in my mind that I had to do something.
Were the things you did when you were a kid to make sure that you did spread the wealth around as much as you could?
Well, I remember when I was in my early 20s, I decided to teach. I spent a year teaching because I thought that's how you make a difference. And the first opportunity I had to be able to work, I did that. There was no such thing as a Teach for America program where I was living, but I created it my own way.
So as part of being a philanthropy advisor, did you have to take counseling classes? I ask because that's clearly part of the process.
Well, I didn't have to take counseling classes, but I do find myself playing multiple hats in my role as a strategy consultant, a family advisor, sometimes a personal counselor, and an event planner all rolled into one.
It sounds like a busy job.
Well, it's very rewarding because I'm able to see the other side of giving, which is not how giving changes the world. I think we all see that, and we simply need to read an annual report of a charity to have a look at what's going on. But I've had a lot of insight into how giving changes the life of the giver, and so I decided to write a book about that.
And yet, given what you do, you say you do not like to use the word philanthropy. Why?
Exactly. You know, especially these days, when we think of philanthropy, we think of Mark Zuckerberg and billions of dollars going to charitable causes. We think of what Warren Buffett is doing, what Bill Gates is doing, and we think that philanthropy is not for us because we're not billionaires, we're not multimillionaires. And so a word that really simply means the love of mankind has come to represent big-ticket giving that is not practical to all but a very, very, very few of us. So I prefer to use the word giving because all of us can give, whether it's our time, our talents, or our treasures to something that we care about.
So the message is not just for the folks who do have the high net worth, as you put it, but for anybody, because not everybody can do philanthropy, but everybody can do giving.
Absolutely.
Now, it sounds like you do get to see a softer side of many people who are unbelievably wealthy.
Well, yes, I've seen many of them cry happy tears from having been moved by the things that they see. And it's not just wealthy people that I come across with in this career, because once you're involved in the philanthropy world, the social sector, you meet so many people who are involved, whether they're social entrepreneurs or leaders of incredible charities, or even little kids, you know, little kids who are doing their own charitable projects and surprisingly finding purpose at such a young age because of what they're doing.
Now, for some of the people you deal with, and we're not asking you to name names here, I mean, are some of the people who get into philanthropy doing so because, in a sense, they're repenting for the practices that made them rich?
Well, I don't think they're repenting for the whatever it is that made them rich. But let me just give you an example. I've worked a lot in Asia where wealth is new. You know, a lot of wealthy people have made their wealth in very recent times. And if you think about it, they were deprived of a lot of things when they were younger. They were deprived of a good education, for example. And so once they made it, they feel like, I want to give back. I want to give other people the opportunities that I did not have growing up, such as a great education.
So if a kid like me comes along, they're going to have greater chances to get into the game and get started.
Well, yes, why not?
All right, Jenny Santee is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is called The Giving Way to Happiness. We'll come back and talk more about the benefits of giving and a fair amount of science that supports those benefits. Back to the Jefferson Exchange with Jenny Santee and your phone calls and emails in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Jenny Santee. She is a philanthropy advisor, meaning she advises people who have a fair amount of money to put into philanthropic enterprises how to deploy that money. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about her book, The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. And the phone number here is 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Jenny, you really do put all the eggs in the giving basket. You say giving is the meaning of life, really?
Well, you know, that could be true, but the reverse can also be just as true, which is giving can be annoying. You know, giving can make us feel so depleted. It becomes annoying to be asked for things all the time. And so I also discuss the flip side to giving.
Which is what?
Which is that, giving can make you feel so depleted and taken advantage of and fatigued. And if you're a donor, you can get disenchanted. You might find charity work so cheerless. If you're a nonprofit worker, you might feel burnt out, especially these days, this time of the year. There isn't a day that goes by in the mail that doesn't include a solicitation from some charitable organization looking for help. And so all of us experience what we call donor fatigue. And so this is one of the issues that I discuss also in this book, as I've also discovered how and why it is that some people really come alive when they give and some people simply burn out.
What's is it a different kind of person generally psychically, or is it just a set of circumstances that are different?
What I have found is that the biggest reason for this feeling of donor fatigue, this doesn't happen because donors are broke, because nearly all of us can give a little more. Rather, the biggest reason for donor fatigue is that a person's generosity is not well matched to his or her passion.
So, in other words, they're being asked to give to things they don't necessarily believe in?
Well, exactly. Or they're being very reactive about their giving, not proactive. We have all felt the dread that comes from being pressured into giving, such as when friends ask us to donate to their fundraisers, or someone stops us in the street asking for money. And in these cases, we are more likely to give simply to avoid humiliation, rather than out of sheer generosity and concern. And this type of giving doesn't quite lead to a warm glow, happy feeling. More likely, it will lead to resentment or just indifference over time. So instead, what we should do is to set time aside, think about our options, and find the best charity that is aligned with our values and our passions in life.
All right, so find something you really do believe in, a cause you really could get behind supporting, and find an organization doing that work that you feel like you can give to.
Exactly. Find your passion. Our passion should be the foundation for our giving, because it's not how much we give, but how much love we put into giving. And it should not be simply a matter of choosing the right thing, because if you think about it, it's a choice between good and good. It's not a choice between good and bad. There are so many good charities out there all needing our support. And so we should also choose what is right for us, what is good for us, what is really aligned with what our values are and our experiences.
All right, so the book is called Stories and Science Behind the Life-Giving, Life-Changing Power of Giving. That's the subtitle of it. You did talk to quite a few people, and that's the source of the story, some major givers for sure. But who are some of the other people you talked to?
Well, I made a point to talk to people from different walks of life, not just household names, wealthy individuals, but also people who have come from very little or sometimes just really very young and have done incredible things to change the world. And I asked them each and every time, how has this changed your life? And I'd like to share the story of a five-year-old boy named Joshua Williams. You know, he was only 5 years old when he started his charity work, and I call him a philanthropy prodigy. Mm-hmm. He was strapped onto the booster seat in the back of his mother's car when he had his first impulse to give. They were actually on the way to church one day in Florida, and little boy Joshua had $20 in his pocket. This was his birthday present, his birthday money from his grandmother. And at that moment, on the way to church, little Joshua saw on the street a homeless man, and he insisted that they stop the car. He said, "Mom, we need to stop the car because I want to help that man. I want to give that man this money that I have." And apparently, according to his mother, this kept happening every single time they see a homeless person in the street, a beggar in the street. This would happen. And so Joshua was told by his family that you can't keep doing this because this is not sustainable. But Joshua insisted that if he can't do it himself, then he was going to involve his church, his community, his school, his neighbors. And so what eventually happened is that they set up a foundation, and he became the world's youngest foundation president, leading the Joshua's Heart Foundation.
Was he five years old or seven or something?
He was five when it started, and he was 11 when I interviewed him, and he had already been doing this for a couple years. And when I asked him, what has this done for him, can you imagine a little boy telling you, saying, "I have found my purpose in life."
That's amazing. We're talking to Jenny Santee, the author of the book, The Giving Way to Happiness, here on the Jefferson Exchange. Now, I noticed Joshua wants to end hunger and poverty, which raises the question, how much are giving people, and Joshua is certainly one, affected by the seemingly never-ending struggle to see societal wounds like hunger and poverty not heal?
Exactly. Imagine yourself doing emotionally intense charitable work or being exposed to the traumatic suffering of others on a daily basis. Doctors, nurses, counselors, social workers, animal shelter workers are at high risk for this. And we ourselves experience that somehow. There's a lot of decontextualized images of tragedy and suffering that we see day to day in the news. And eventually what happens is that we become so cynical and resistant to helping people who are suffering. So how do we move from this sense of compassion fatigue into satisfaction, compassion satisfaction, or the feeling that makes a strain, you know, the feeling of gratification that makes a strain of doing the work worth it? I've learned a few tips and techniques from the people I interviewed along the way. And I just like to share with you some of these some of these tips. So one is to learn to say no to the things that don't matter as much to you, so that you can say yes to the things that deeply do matter. And the other thing is to find strength in a group. And one thing that's amazing about being involved in charity work and philanthropic work is that you meet a steady stream of really inspiring, amazing, dedicated people. And you should also lean on each other for support, because the work will get tough and you do need each other to keep each other strong.
Okay, so learn to say no to the things that you don't find important so you can say yes to the ones you do. Strengthen groups. What other tip you got?
Well, another thing is to take care of yourself first. You know how when we're on an airplane and there is a demonstration of what should we do in the event of an emergency, and the flight attendant tells us that when the oxygen mask drops down, we should put it on ourselves first before putting it on the person beside us. So same goes for this case. You know, we should take care of ourselves first and practice self-love before we begin to try and address everyone else's issues.
Jenny Santee, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. We're talking about not just, hey, that gave me a little warm fuzzy, but also you can get a real health benefit from giving, as we'll discover as we go further into the interview. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Grumpy John in Grants Pass, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jenny Santee.
Thanks. Let's take it a little further back in the acquisition of stuff to give away. When I'm dictator of the world, which should be happening any time now, however you got your money, no matter how nefarious, when you have acquired so much money that you cannot possibly physically spend the amount that you have, in cash, no writing checks, when you cannot physically deliver this for the rest of your life, you'd have enough to give away all the money that you have if you transfer it in cash. Then, from that point on, all your garnering of income has to be dedicated to projects that will increase clean water and a safer environment. Simple change of rules. You might have made your money polluting streams. When you get that much money, you have to change. You have to do nothing. You cannot acquire any money unless it is going to benefit the planet.
Okay, thanks for that, Grumpy John. Appreciate it. Jenny, thoughts on if John became the dictator of the world?
Well, my approach to this is that I really hope that we learn to approach giving not as a grinding moral obligation that we had to do because there are so many people in need or we've made so much money, oh, now we have to do this. But, you know, rather as something that we really do want to do. We really do want to do because it brings us a lot of fulfillment, a lot of meaning, and a lot of joy. And I have seen so many times, so many stories of how people not only found purpose, but actually there are five things I've seen of how giving changes the life of the giver. And the first one is that giving helps us find purpose. The second thing is that giving elevates our careers into not just jobs, but callings. And the third thing is that giving helps us recover from very painful experiences in life, whether it's a death of a loved one or a collective tragedy that we go through together as a community. And the fourth one is how giving together with our families, our friends, our loved ones bring us closer to one another. And finally, how giving gives us a sense of significance and meaning in life beyond material success.
Well, a couple of stories that you put in here. Petra Nemkova, she was a world famous model and got caught in the middle of the tsunami. Why don't you pick up the story there and tell us what happened to her?
Yes, a beautiful story told by a beautiful woman, Petra Nemkova, who has been through so much. She was vacationing in Thailand in December 2004. Together with her fiancé, Simon, when the Indian Ocean tsunami hit. And her fiancé, Simon, was swept away by the current and was never seen again, while Petra broke her bones and was told that she might never walk again. But you know what really surprised me about Petra when she told me her story is that it was barely a year after the tsunami, and she was still recovering from her physical wounds and her emotional wounds and the grief of having lost her fiancé. Well, guess what she did? She could have stayed. I mean, she was actually already back in the United States, far away from the scene of the tragedy. But she went back. She went back to Thailand to do nothing else. She had nothing else to do there except to help. She only wanted to go back to help. And so she set up what became the Happy Hearts Fund, and she had a vision of rebuilding the schools there and the lives of the young victims of the natural disaster. And she told me that through this experience, she was able to transform her grief into a new passion for life and a completely changed outlook. And that by giving, you can heal faster emotionally, but also physically. And that you can have an impact on so many lives, but also find joy in your own life. And that there's a selfish element in it, because when we make someone happy, we become even happier ourselves.
It's interesting to think of it in those terms, though, about it. It's about it being a selfish act to give something to somebody. But if it gives you the good stuff, I mean, it's, I don't know, I guess I still struggle with the term selfish in that context.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you know, this is even exactly the same word that was used by another person I interviewed, Liz Alderman. I interviewed Liz and her husband, Steve Alderman, and their story is so profoundly moving. They lost their son, Peter Alderman, on September 11th, 2001, because Peter, who was only 25 years old at that time, was attending a conference at the World Trade Center, and the building was struck. And in June of the following year, when they were still mourning and they're still very, very depressed after what had happened, actually Liz said she wanted to just die. You know, she was already in her 70s, and she felt there was no more reason to live after what had happened. But one night they came across a program about post-traumatic stress disorder, post-traumatic depression, suffered by those who were scarred by violence and trauma, just as their family was. And it just occurred to Liz that she should probably help. You know, she wanted to just try and do whatever she could to help those other people who were also feeling something similar to what she was going through. And this little gesture grew and grew. And what eventually happened is that they set up a small foundation. And Liz and Steve are not wealthy people. They're just average people. Liz is a homemaker. Steve is a doctor. And they set up a small foundation, a small charity that would help alleviate the suffering of victims of violence in post-conflict countries. And they transformed their guest room in their family home into an office for the foundation. And their daughter, Jane, served as a foundation CFO. And when I asked Liz how this transformed her life, she said, you know, there was definitely a selfish element in it, because she found so much strength after this experience, and that she was actually able to find hope to live again by helping others.
Let's take a call here. We have Leo and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jenny Santi, the author of The Giving Way to Happiness.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Is it Jenny or Jenny?
Jenny.
I have one question regarding giving and receiving, and it's regarding the panhandling epidemic in America. To give or not to give is my question.
All right, that's a pretty simple one. Thanks for that, Leo. Appreciate it. Panhandling on the nation's streets, it seems to be on the rise, and more people seem to complain about it all the time. Jenny, do you take any particular position on that?
Well, that is a tough one, and as I just told you the story of Joshua Williams, his philanthropic impulse began when he basically saw a panhandler, a homeless person in the street who he wanted to help, and through helping that person, Joshua found his purpose. You know, eventually doing more and more charitable work, this little boy, Joshua, found his purpose. But I completely understand that for many of us, getting asked all the time gets annoying. And these days, there isn't a day that goes by that we don't come across not just a panhandler on the street, but so many charities asking us for something, asking us for more things. And so my advice would actually be to be proactive about our giving, not simply reactive, to charities that approach us, charities that are so persistently hounding us, or panhandlers on the street. But be proactive. Ask yourself, what is it that you truly, deeply care about? And make that the foundation for your giving.
All right, so pick the places you're going to give in advance. We're talking to Jenny Santee. We'll come back and talk more about the Giving Way to Happiness with Jenny and you in 1 minute. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Jenny Santee. She's a philanthropy advisor, helping people who are interested in giving away large amounts of money in good ways to direct those amounts of money. And she's written a book about what she's discovered, not just through her own work, but also through the work of other people, including scientists, looking at the effect of philanthropy and giving on the brain. The book is called The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we discuss the topic. 800-838-3760 on the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Paul in Grants Pass, you're up. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, good morning. Grumpy John has to stand in line on the dictator of the world thing.
Everybody wants that.
Yeah, well, no sane person does. Larry Niven wrote about that a long time ago. In any event, ma'am, I think the compassion burnout thing has to do with the definition of compassion. Giving is a wonderful thing. The problem is that so many people give with strings attached. Compassion is really recognizing that a person is where they are as a result of a combination of their choices and their environment, and that it's up to them to work their way out of it. You can't pull them out of it. You can help them with tools, but the minute that you develop attachment in the sense of an attachment to the outcome, you're guaranteeing burnout and probably guaranteeing failure. You know, it's a matter of celebrating the victories when they come, and if a victory doesn't come now, well, it may come later. At least you helped.
Okay, interesting concept. Thanks for that, Paul. Appreciate the attachment part of that, getting attached to the outcome. How much have you found out about that in your work, Jenny?
Well, I agree with that comment. In fact, another thing I found out from having interviewed so many people in the charity sector on how they find strength and how they avoid burnout is to think that you are not the cause. You have an identity outside of the work that you do. That's one. And another thing is that these people find more hands-on opportunities that allow them to directly experience the positive outcomes of their work. So celebrate the little victories along the way.
So we haven't talked about the brain at this point. You think that the giving to and caring for others might be a higher brain function, but you found out some stuff from researchers that it comes from a more primitive part of the brain, it sounds like.
Right, it does. And experiments now show evidence that the joy of giving has a biological basis in the brain and that altruism is hardwired in the brain and is pleasurable. For instance, through fMRI technology, we can now look at a brain scan and see that when we give and when we volunteer, there are two brain reward systems that are activated. And these are exactly the same parts of the brain that are stimulated by food, by sex, and thoughts of romantic partners.
Really? So the pleasure center of the brain is actually triggered by giving?
Yes. And you know how there's a sensation we call the runner's high, which is the powerful physical sensation associated with vigorous exercise? Well, researchers also have coined the term the helper's high, which is the feeling of euphoria that we experience when we help others.
You've got research on both kids and adults cited in here. Do they generally track in similar ways?
Well, yes, that's surprising. This feeling of the joy of giving is true even for toddlers.
Really? That's a little hard to believe for some people, especially anybody who's seen a three-year-old run around yelling, mine, mine, mine.
Yes. Well, you know, if you think about it, human beings have evolved as a species because we have the capacity to care for one another. We have very vulnerable offspring, and we have survived because we help each other.
Interesting. Now, through all this research, have limits been found? Like, obviously you need to take care of yourself before others, but are there dollar amounts, for example, that stop people, either low or high? You know, like, I can't give that much, anything like that?
There have not been any studies on the threshold as to how much to give, what to give. But I think it's more of a subjective matter. Let's ask ourselves, how do we want to give? In what way does giving feel right to us? And in what way can we give, not until it hurts, but until it actually makes us feel good?
Jenny, we're on the verge of getting a garble in your voice. If you can just make sure your mouth is close to the microphone, we'll be all set.
Oh, okay.
Here. There we go. So is it a transcendent thing? I mean, is it different in different countries or different cultures, or is this pretty much a thing that all humans are capable of doing, regardless of cultural surroundings?
I've found that people have more similarities than differences across cultures, even when it comes to giving.
Interesting. Okay, so now how much of this is self-reporting on feeling good versus actual scientific measurement?
Well, there has been so much scientific evidence now on the mental health benefits of giving, on volunteerism. For example, there's a recent study from Carnegie Mellon University that shows that volunteering for at least 4 hours a week dramatically lowers blood pressure in older adults. So, every day we're learning more about how negative lifestyle factors like a poor diet and lack of exercise increase hypertension risk. But there's also a lot of research into how positive lifestyle factors such as volunteer work could actually reduce disease risk. And the results give older adults in particular an example of something they can actively do to remain healthy and age successfully.
That's really interesting. So just an hour a day, Monday through Thursday, and you'd be doing yourself a fair amount of benefit physically.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are the mechanisms here? Do we get endorphins for giving or something?
We do get that. And also, apart from the science of it, there's so many stories I encountered along the way on those five different ways that giving improves the life of the giver, whether you're giving your time, your talents, your treasures to something that you care about. And people are finding purpose. People are finding meaningful careers. People are recovering from very painful experiences. People are becoming closer to their loved ones, and people are finding meaning beyond material wealth.
It's interesting you mentioned the Aldermans, Liz and Steve, who lost a son in 9/11. I was just listening this morning to an interview with one of the parents of Aviel Richman, who died at the shooting in Sandy Hook, and about how the parents just didn't know if they could go on after that. But they started a foundation to work to find ways to curtail gun violence, and they found meaning in life through that.
There you go. There's so many examples of people who have found strength after facing very traumatic experiences in life through helping others. And I cover many of these stories in this book.
We have a comment here that Denise and Eugene dropped off. She says, for her, giving is an opportunity to express her gratitude with what she has in the world. And she gives us an example that she's a sustaining member of Jefferson Public Radio because she appreciates all that we give her through our programming. So giving begets giving, it sounds like.
Well, yes, and there's also a relationship between giving and gratitude. For example, there's a question of what kind of giving results in more happiness and fulfillment. Is it anonymous giving or is it public giving? And when I asked I asked Harvard scientist Michael Norton, what is it? What kind of giving results in more happiness and fulfillment? And he said that it's actually giving publicly that results in more happiness and fulfillment, although most of us think that giving anonymously is the more virtuous thing. But giving publicly allows us to more directly experience the gratitude of those that we are helping and have a relationship with them that in turn helps us become happier and more fulfilled.
Interesting. Now, there's another concept in here that kind of brings you up short when you write, it's a simple phrase, giving time gives you time.
Yes, isn't that surprising?
Yeah.
Giving time, although you should think that you're actually going to run out of time if you do that, it actually gives us what scientists call a sense of time affluence. It feels like we have more time because we feel that we have made very good use of our time. We have made productive use of our time when we help others.
Interesting. So both with time and with money, it sounds like if we're making some proactive decisions about what it is that we are parting with, we are much more at ease with those decisions than if somebody says, hey, come over here and give me a dollar, or hey, I need an hour of your time.
Absolutely. You know, let's not just be simply guilt-tripped into giving. I don't want to encourage, I don't want to discourage people, rather, from giving to good causes just because it doesn't always cheer us up, just because sometimes we're pressured into it. Because if we gave only to get something back each and every single time, then what a dreadful opportunistic world this would be. But if we are feeling guilt-tripped into giving each and every time we give, then chances are we will not be very committed to the causes over time. So let's find some time to be proactive about our giving and, you know, set time aside to think about what we really care about, what are the different options that we have, and find the best charity that is aligned with what we truly, deeply care about.
Now, we've talked about the benefits of giving to us, and I want to get the distinction that you define in the book here. You say that happiness and finding purpose are not necessarily the same thing. How do you divide those up?
Well, I recently came across this saying that goes that happiness is something you come across on the way to purpose.
Ah, okay. So work toward the purpose and the happiness comes on that way.
You just stumble upon it along the way.
Now, you cite the story of Viktor Frankl, the concentration camp survivor. Many people know the name, but how does he figure, particularly in a book about giving?
Well, if you think about what Viktor Frankl went through, it is one of the most traumatic, painful things that anyone could ever go through in a concentration camp set up by the Nazis. And what Viktor Frankl said, that the meaning of life is found in helping others. So he's just yet another one of those many, many people who have found meaning and purpose in life by finding something beyond themselves. And in fact, many of us have heard of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? The the hierarchy where self-actualization is at the very top of the hierarchy of what people want to accomplish in life. And yet what actually, I didn't even know this until I did the research for this book, but apparently Abraham Maslow actually revised this hierarchy of needs. And now, and yet he was not able to publish the revised hierarchy because he died before he was able to do so. But guess what now lies in Maslow's revised hierarchy of needs as the topmost need of man beyond self-actualization?
Giving?
It's actually self-transcendence.
Huh.
Self-transcendence, where people put the needs of others beyond themselves.
So now the flip side of not finding meaning in our lives, I can just imagine where that leads. And would that be depression and dissatisfaction and a series of negative feelings?
Oh, yes. And it's a feeling of being in a funk, not really knowing what we're here for. And this reminds me of another one of my interviewees, Wendy Kopp. Wendy Kopp founded Teach for America when she was fresh out of Princeton. And this is a really inspiring story of someone who's not rich, not famous, but really just a college student trying to find what to do, you know, what meaningful thing to do with her life. And so she had this idea of encouraging the best and the brightest students to dedicate a year of their lives right after graduation to teach, and you know, to teach in deprived neighborhoods, needy communities, all across the United States. And when I interviewed Wendy and asked her, how has this changed your life? And she said that, you know, after setting up Teach for America, she has not one day has gone by that she's ever, she's never ever questioned her purpose in life ever again. She really knows what she's here for. She has that solid sense of her meaning, her purpose, her passion in life.
So I want to finish up by coming back to Joshua Williams. You interviewed him when he was 11. He'd already been a foundation president for 6 years. Has he continued with it?
Yes, he has, and he's still very, very active in it.
All right. And much we've learned about in the book. It's called The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. Jenny Santee is a philanthropy advisor and the author of the book, and she's been our guest on The Exchange today. Jenny, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. And I just want to close by saying, let's give not until it hurts, but until it feels great.
Okay, thanks for that, Jenny. Appreciate it.